Welcome to the latest edition of the New York Jazz Workshop podcast, everybody. I'm your host, CJ Shern. In this episode, I am very proud to present an interview that I did with the great Brazilian drummer, Vanderlei Pereira, who is a faculty member at the New York Jazz Workshop. He has performed or recorded with the biggest names in both Brazilian jazz and jazz in general, including Ayrton Moreira, Flora Purim, Toot Stielemans, Victor Gonçalves, Romero Lobambo, Antonio Adolfo, and many others. He is the leader of his band Blindfold Test, and he is also in Sanfonia Brasileira with Victor Gonçalves on accordion and Eduardo Bello on bass. He has been a professor at CUNY in the New School, teaching as an adjunct professor. He's taught master classes at Berkeley, Rutgers, the University of Arts in Philadelphia, and he will be teaching an intensive at the New York Jazz Workshop on July 19th to the 22nd with Victor Gonçalves. And once again, if you want to study with Vanderlei Pereira, he is right at the New York Jazz Workshop along with Victor Gonçalves, and you will learn about the rich history of Brazilian music through studying with Vanderlei Pereira. So I'm very happy to present this interview with him today. This interview was conducted in late June, and it is in advance of the intensive, which again takes place on July 19th to the 22nd. Again, I am very, very happy to have done this interview with Mr. Pereira, and I extend my gratitude towards him. Here is my conversation with Vanderlei Pereira. You've recorded and performed with really a who's who of Brazilian music and jazz. I mean, Ayrton Moreira, Flora Purim, Toots Thurman's, Victor Gonçalves, Romero Lobambo, Antonio Adolfo, many others. You've been influenced not only by, in your teen years, Antonio Carlos Jobim, Edu Lobo, Dori Cammy, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Heitor Villa-Lobos, Pieri Reis from your hometown, but you've also been influenced by Milton Banana, Ayrton Moreira, Nana Vasconcelos, Elvin Jones, Tony Williams, Nene, Philly Joe Jones, and Papa Joe Jones. So that's a lot. So let's start out with your conception on the drums and how you bring all those influences together, not only from Brazilian music but jazz and pop.
Well, I self-taught how to play the drum set in the beginning, and pretty soon I was introduced to other instruments as well. And as you already read about me, I'm a youngest of seven siblings. I have two other brothers, one musician, one plays guitar, bass, and the other one is a saxophone in big band. So I was exposed to a lot of different music styles. You know, I think when I was born, jazz was already being played at home. And, you know, by the time I was 13, 14, one of my brothers, he saw that I was getting serious about drums, and then he said, well, look, you gotta be a musician, you know. If you only play drums, that doesn't mean you're a musician. You have to know some other stuff. You have to know harmony, melody, and how to relate. And then hang out with the other brother. He can teach you some harmony. So I did, yeah. And then one thing led to another, and then I learned classical music, and then I really start understanding that drum set is a combination of a lot of percussion, and you have to sound musical. So, and then I'm very sensitive to harmony and dynamic, you know, that I learned from classical music, and how you know, use the colors. Use Ayrton Moreira, he's a percussionist, he's able to play the groove and add some colors, you know, the forest sound, the birds, and keeping the groove. And then I noticed from listening to Tony Williams, he kind of, he does something similar to jazz. He's able to play the groove, but there's all these other colors, and that enhanced the music. Mm-hmm. In classical music, I saw the percussionist that I think he's the drummer for Johnny Mathis. He was living in Brazil playing with the orchestra. I saw him that, you know, he had like four cymbals. And then I asked, why you have four cymbals? Oh, no, I listen to the chords, and then I pick which cymbals go to which chords, and then, wow. So I learned something from talking to everybody, you know. And a few months ago, I ran into a drummer here in Broadway, this guy, Leroy Williams, and then he told me he played with Monk, and then I asked, what did you learn from Monk? Ah, you have to worry about your sound. That means how you touch the drum, how you tune, and which kind of cymbal. And then, you know, that opened a can of worm in my mind. And then I came home, and that same day started retuning my drum. So one thing leads to another one, and am I still forever researching? I don't think I'm going to accomplish what in this lifetime.
Yeah, Leroy Williams is a tremendous, terrific player. I have a couple of albums that he's on the Xanadu label with Barry Harris and with Charles McPherson, and he's just a terrific drummer with his colors and timekeeping and your drumming. As I've been listening to your playing with Sanfonia Brasileira and your own group Blindfold Test, one of the things that I love about your playing is that it's so dynamically sound, and you pick just the right comping at the right moment, and you interact with the soloist in such a beautiful way. And your cymbals, you just mentioned that. Like the tone of your cymbals, you really choose the cymbals to fit the musical situation, and I really, really love that. And when we talked the other day, you had mentioned that you were using a Paiste cymbal, and I can understand why, because Paiste, like I said, it has a particular alloy that they use, and it cuts through instruments in a very particular way. And I find, you know, the usage of all the different cymbals that you have to be very, very fascinating and interesting, and I listened.
Yeah, in these days, I'm using Paiste cymbal as a ride, and I have a Dream cymbal company as a change for the crash, and I have an old flat top cymbal from Italy called Ufit, and the only fusion that I have now is my hi-hat. Mm-hmm. And actually, I found better features when I split the cymbals. I put on top the cymbal that was designed to be on the bottom, and that gave me all the features that I need. I have to use wooden sticks, you know, hit with a bit, hit on the side of the stick. So that's what I'm trying to be, to look for sound, you know. And the drum set, just the percussion instrument, and I try to balance everything as if it was like a group of percussion plays together instead of just drum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in pop music in America, it's everything about snare and kick, like tum-tum-pa, tum-tum-pa, tum-tum-pa. But in Brazil now, we have the other group, like everything, as it was like five people playing. That's what I'm looking for when I play drums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And you know, one of my favorite rhythms in Brazilian music that you play is the baião. And I watched a video of your teacher, Bobby Sanabria, explaining that rhythm, and he was talking about how all the elements of the drum set are emulating different percussion instruments.
Yeah.
And that's so, so cool.
Yeah, I love Bobby. He's one of my mentors for Latin gotten, you know, Afro-Caribbean music, and I learned a lot from being his student, and everything I know about Latin drums and music from Cuba, everything I learned on drums and left foot clave, I was really encouraged by Bobby Sanabria, and I learned from him. And I practiced those. A great guy,
Yeah, and your teachers, you also studied with the great John Riley, the great Vernell Fournier, who, of course, was in Ahmad Jamal's trio, and you're, no wonder your brush playing is so great, because the studies with Vernell Fournier, you can hear that, and I could also hear the influence of Elvin Jones and Philly Joe Jones in your brush playing as well, and
it's
great.
My first jazz brush I learned from another American drummer that was in Brazil, in Rio, playing percussion for the Orquestra Sinfonica. Was this guy called Teddy Moore. He taught me some brushes that I use today. And later on here in America, I studied brushes with Clayton Cameron.
Oh, yeah, and he played with Kenny Burrell as well.
Exactly. He had a video on brushes playing, and I love, and also I learned a lot from listening to Joe Morello, you know, playing with Dave Brubeck. He has a way to play brushes, especially three-time signature, that it's amazing, very unique the way he played.
There's so many great drummers, and Milton Banana, I remember from, like a lot of people, I grew up with Getson Gilberto and Gilberto with Turrentine on CTI, of course.
Banana, I had the pleasure to meet him personally, like at least 8 months before he died. I was in Rio de Janeiro on vacation. Then I was sitting in a club, and then when I left the stage, Milton Banana was there watching me playing, and he was so kind to me, and really enjoyed it. I feel honored by having, you know, met Milton Banana and Wilson Les Neves and Edson Machado. I met those guys personally. Those are my idols in Brazilian music, and Robertinho Silva as well. I used to play with Milton Nascimento.
Yeah, Milton Nascimento, of course.
I met Ayrton here in New York. Same situation. I was playing downtown and restaurant Amazonas back in 1992, 91. And then Ayrton in Florida, they showed up and I was playing. I had no idea they were an audience. But that was great. And that led me, they invited me to play with them at the old Village Gate. And it was like salsa meets jazz on Mondays in the early 90s. And I used to have a double bill with Tito Puente, and then he had all of us playing with him. And my wife also, that she's a pianist, she plays surdo. So she also got invited. I used to invite us. I used to thought it was. I mean, now we remain friends. My upcoming CD, I'm playing one of his compositions, Misturadas, which is a mixing of a couple of different rhythms, but playing in 7 meters.
Yeah, that's a terrific tune. Actually, just a few weeks ago, I was listening to that reunited as a band to some extent, and there was a CD and a Blu-ray release of their concert in Montreux Jazz Festival from 2009. And Ayrton does Misturada as a solo percussion feature, and it's amazing. He even does some Tuvan throat singing on that. And it's, you know, I've always loved Ayrton's playing. I grew up listening to his playing, and Nano Vasconcelos I love as well. I first heard him with Pat Metheny Group, and Dom Romeo. Another terrific percussionist.
Yeah.
And I love his percussion work on Weather Report Live in Tokyo, which is probably my favorite Weather Report album of all time.
Wow, yeah, I met all of those guys. They used to live in New York, and New York is such a great place, man. I'm so blessed to be here.
Mm.
I got the chance to meet, in person all my idols, and very recently I got to meet Steve Gadd, in person.
Wow.
The Blue Note during the break when he was playing with Chick Corea. I'm so blessed.
Yes. You know, there's kind of a funny story about Steve Gadd that I tell to people. So there's this album that I grew up on called CTI Summer Jazz at the Hollywood Bowl. It was a 3-record set. And yeah, that album was recorded at the Hollywood Bowl in 1972, but it came out in 1977. And Jack DeJohnette was the drummer at the concert, but for some reason, Creed Taylor decided to have Steve Gadd overdub Jack DeJohnette's drum parts. And, I know a man who worked with Steve Gadd as far as public relations, and I've been trying to get a hold of him so I could ask him about that, if he recalls what the circumstances were. Because also Steve Gadd overdubbed drum parts for George Benson's drummer on in concert at Carnegie Hall. So even though the album says Jack DeJohnette on drums, it's actually Steve Gadd.
Wow, I think I heard that album. I'm a very good friend with Romero Lubambo back in the day in Brazil. Now we hung out a lot and we played together a lot back in Brazil, before we both left. And I remember, I think he was the one who played me that CD, that live, that George Benson live at Carnegie Hall. Yeah. I always enjoy listening to live recording because, it tells you exactly how the guys play,
Right, exactly.
No studio tricks, the band sounds like raw, like it is, like true,
Yeah, but like I said, those albums have studio tricks on them. So, yeah. If you would, please, just talk a little bit about Nana Vasconcelos, because he was such an incredible percussionist, and we lost him a few years ago, and he also worked with special needs children as well. He was a phenomenal person.
Yeah, the person, I heard that when he moved back to his home city, he was became very strong, like the director of an event that happens every carnival there. Recife is the Pernambuco, the state of Pernambuco, is where the culture of maracatu resides there.
Mm.
Two very important rhythms in Brazilian music called, one is maracatu, the baque virado, maracatu rural, maracatu nação, was left Luanda, Africa, on the 1800, maybe. It's living in Recife. And also the other style that lived there was founded as Frevo. Now, I'm sure for the last couple of years, that guy called the Spock Frevo, he was able to bring his orchestra to New York. Frevo is like a street kind of music, but he was able to polish really and add improvisation,
mm-hmm.
Inspired by the American jazz big band. I spent my carnival of 2002 in Recife. I ran into Nana Vasconcelos there. He was leading at least 20 or more groups of maracatu on a he showed he was able to split the audience in two parts and ask people to clap their hands. People from the left clap their hands in a certain way, and people from the right clap your hands using your fingers and other things. Anyway, he had the entire crowd doing, and then he basically simulated the sound of the ocean, of a river, the waters. So it was amazing what he did.
Yeah.
And he had a stand of tambourines, percussion, Brazilian tambourines, and would play like at least six of them with one hand. He was very creative. It's hard for me to describe that tambourine machine that he had.
Yeah, he was so creative. Yeah.
And also, he was able to play kashishi in 6/8, and then playing atabaki in 2/4 at the same time.
He was a master.
Also, the first time I heard him was on a record by Milton Nascimento called Milagre dos Peixes. There was two editions. One was done live on a concert in São Paulo. But there was also a studio version of Milagre dos Peixes, like Miracle of Fishes.
Mm-hmm.
On that studio version, Brazil was in a dictatorship. So I guess there was a lot of instrumental music because, the censorship did not allow to put the record with lyrics. I guess something was very political on the lyrics. But Naná Vasconcello, he played a lot of great percussion tracks on that Milton CD, using his voice as a, to imitate birds, to imitate the wind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he did so many unusual, crossover stuff using percussion instrument that was fascinating. It was a name that I never forgot. And then again, I have the honor to meet him in person here in New York. And I have pictures with him from that carnival of 2002 in the
city.
He inspired many, many, many people. And I you know.
Yes. He happens to be one of my best friends. He happens to be his favorite percussionist. And the thing that always I remember about Naná's playing is that vocal effect that he does, where it's kind of like this unusual trill and it ends up panning back and forth between the speakers. It's something he does on like As Falls Wichita with Pat Metheny and Lyle Mays. And tons of other stuff. And the other thing that I always remembered about Naná was his talking drum playing, and also just the kind of groove he could generate with the shakers was just unbelievable. And,
with that small little shaker that used to play the beating ball, it's called kashishi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used also those amazing things with those.
Yeah. So great.
So many inspiring guys out there.
Yes, absolutely. So I would like to shift some focus now to your teaching career and also the upcoming intensive that you have at the New York Jazz Workshop on July 19th to the 22nd, I believe.
Yeah.
So you have been an adjunct professor at CUNY, at the New School. You've taught master classes at Berkeley, Rutgers, the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and your teaching, your degrees, you received a diploma and teaching certificate in theory, rhythm, and sight singing from the Academia de Lorenzo Fernandez in Rio de Janeiro, where you're from.
Correct. Yeah.
And also you were...
That was right before I lost my vision, I played with orchestra when I had vision, and then I met one young student of Academia Lorenzo Fernandes. She said, oh man, you should have this. You should have a kind of diploma, because the way things go, you know, doesn't your talent won't count. You know, all the schools are getting, they want to see diploma, they want to see degrees. And then I went there and got my diploma there. In theory, with the rest of vision I had, you know. I'm happy that I. Yeah, and it's good. About my teaching, you know, I teach. My specialty is Brazilian music, you know, whether to the percussion, whether to a little bit of guitar and bass, and how the guitar and bass relate to percussion. And on a basic level, I don't perform play those instruments. I don't perform, you know, only in my house. And I use them to research, to compose. You know, I'm talking about guitar and bass.
Wow.
And now I'm really spending time on piano, and figuring out the piano. It came very handy when I have to teach. To teach at the workshop, at the New York Jazz Workshop. So I can really explain to the student how those instruments relate, how the percussion, it relates to the guitar and bass. And I designed a method of teaching that it's all about that, how the any tonal instrument relates to the percussion. That's including singing as well, you know. How can you imitate the beating bowl sound and the glissades and slurs of the beating bowl, how you can do that on a voice, on an instrument, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually never knew that anybody could emulate the berimbau with your voice, because the cuica, you can do the cuica with your voice, you know, that's easy, but the berimbau, that's tricky. So that's impressive that somebody could do that with their voice.
No, it berimbau, you know, is by using the coin on the left hand and hit is a single string that you hit with a right hand, as you have the stick on the right hand and also kashishi, and the left hand you're holding the berimbau and holding a little coin that you press against the string, so you can find the two different tones. And then you say ding 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 ding, and then when you press a little coin that you hold on, like, when you press, the pitch of the berimbau goes higher. When it's open, down, and then down, the second note, when you touch the string with the coin, and then you press, down, ding, 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 depending on the level of the strength you put, you know, pulling the string, you can get those tones.
Wow.
You know, you hit with the right hand and press the skin soon after. And then, you know, some people, like guys like Tony Orta, I noted that if Binibal had a scale, more notes. If you play guitar, I use that when you play a note, you know, like they call the slur. You know, you hit with the one string one hand and then move the left finger to the accord across the fret of the guitar, you can get.
Wow. Well, yeah. So I completely see now how the percussion instruments like the birimbau relate to the guitar and the bass in the way that you just explained that. That was a brilliant way of explaining. Thank you so much.
On this last week I played at Fat Cat, and then there's a new bass player in town. His name is Leonardo Lustini. At rehearsals he said, "Oh, I'm developing some stuff, the birimbau on a bass. I have this 7-string bass." I'm like, "Oh, great!" But then at the concert at the gig at Fat Cat, I surprised him. "Okay, Leonardo, why don't you play our opening with your birimbau sound on electric bass?" So he did, and it sounded really nice.
Wow.
And I have it here recorded.
that's great. That's really amazing. So I just want to cover a few more things. So you were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa when you were 6, and then you lost your sight at 31 in 1986, and you told me in our previous phone conversation you moved to New York after that. And how has having a visual impairment like that, having a disability like that, how has that sharpened your other senses?
I was lucky that I lost my vision when I was 31 years old. By then, I already had studied, had played with the orchestra, and also from playing a little bit guitar and bass. So that kind of knowledge helped me to memorize composition and to help me when analyzing composition that I'm about to play the drum set. And so I no longer can read music anymore. And then I ask the people, the musician who hired me to send a recording I had in advance so we can learn the music that way. And sometimes I hear things that, you know, when I'm listening to the music, I get the cues from the guitar, from the piano, you know, when there's a modulation, and then I know how to play the drums, enhance that modulation of music. My disability helps a lot with that. How you hear things. And sometimes, you know, if I'm playing with a band, there's a saxophone player, he's using the microphone, and then he's the band leader, he's playing his solo, and when I notice that he plays off the microphone, and then I that's the cue for me, okay, now he's gonna finish, and then I finish, because it turns to the band, he leaves the microphone. That fraction of a second, I noticed that he's not playing microphone, and then that's the cue, you know, and then I'm ready to finish the tone.
Wow, so it's like a combination of not only feeling the air move, but also kind of hearing the direction that he's moving.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, when I see that the volume of the saxophone or the singer, it went lower, that it turned away to give the band cue, and a kind of cue. And that helped me. I have my level of focus has to be, it's always looking for those kind of cue situations.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
It's not all the time that I get a verbal cue, and say, ah!
Yeah.
Sometimes, that happens, you know. If you're using microphone, I can tell,
Wow.
My disabilities, you know, sometimes I at this point, after, you know, I lost my vision in 1986, my second eye, it took me solid 22 years to adjust
while
I'm on stage. But at this point, I'm happy to enjoy all the blessing that comes along. You know?
Yeah. You know, that's very, very interesting, because I saw a film about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, at the Japan Society, and it was called The Ballad of Odin, and it was about a blind traveling singer, and she was told that the Buddha made her blind so that she didn't have to see the hell of the world. And that was a very, very interesting point of view. It kind of reminds me of what you're saying, is that you view your blindness as a blessing, and as a person who uses a power wheelchair, I have cerebral palsy. I can say that if I wasn't in this wheelchair, I probably would not have met all of the wonderful people that I've met in the way that I've met them, and I'm very fortunate that Marco Kello brought us together, because he told me he was thinking about our experiences as people with disabilities, and though we have very different experiences, we could sort of relate on some common ground.
Well, I'll tell you more, man. That's, you know, from being blind, I need help to cross the street, and I meet like countless people every day. You know, I live in Manhattan. Here we walk a lot.
Right.
And then I meet people, and then as I'm crossing the street, I try to give them, you know, something back, you know. Give them my positive vibe and creating jokes and asking where they are. In New York, you meet everybody from all over the place. And, I met a guy from Bangladesh, and then I asked him, so how do you say, how are you? Then they go, oh, I can't bonacho. Oh, how do you say thing? Everything is well. Balo, balo, bashi, balo. So, and also, I remember also that your wheelchair, once I stopped at the corner at the Broadway, and then I asked for help because it's double A street, I don't want to risk. And then, someone that was next to me was on a wheelchair and said, oh, put your hand here on my wheelchair, we're going to cross together.
Oh, yeah, and, wow.
And well, then we crossed together, and when I reached the other side of Broadway, this man came to me, oh, man, I hope you don't mind, I took a picture of what that happened. This is a New York, only in place like New York that could happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I crossed the street with holding the wheelchair. And the other side, I said, thank you so much. That's amazing that we are able to do this, at this level of bond.
Yes, and I have a feeling that you and I will meet sometime, you know, soon in the near future. And
let me know when you come to Manhattan.
Oh, yeah, you could definitely hold on to my wheelchair, too, and, you know, we can cross the street together as well. And, you know, I just wanted to ask you, so you have the band Blindfold Test and also Sinfonia Brasileira.
Sinfonia Brasileira, and also I have, my wife, she's also in Brazilian music, she has Sabor Brasil. And Sabor Brasil, I played with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I play with Paul Myers. He has World on a String. I'm a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Myers is a wonderful guitar player that likes playing music and makes. With him, I got the chance to play his composition that's not always influenced by Brazilian music, but he influenced from jazz, from Afro-Cuban music, from African rhythm 6/8. So, you know, I work with singers here, and so I do a lot of stuff, and I'm relatively busy.
Yeah, you have two CDs coming out, right?
Yeah, I teach in a few different places. I teach for the blind at Lighthouse Guild. I have 5 students there, and I conduct drum circle percussion ensemble for blind percussionists.
Wow.
And I teach workshops, and I teach also young kids, you know, drum set.
Yeah.
I have a student, a very talented drum student, who is 60 years old, and he can play the George Benson CD Breezy, back to back every song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I co-lead a class of percussion, Brazilian percussion, at a private school, mm-hmm. at Rudolf Steiner School. And I teach to New York Jazz Academy as well. And I have private students. Sometimes I have a guitar student that comes to me to learn Brazilian music, bass student. And yeah, my schedule is very hectic. Now, end of June, I found time to give you an interview.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I wanted to ask you, too. So how did you hook up with Marco Kello and Mark Momas of the New York Jazz Workshop?
So, Mark Momas, I read that him from other sources through the Lillian. That's a good friend of mine. I played together. But Mark Momas, he contacted Vitor Gonçalves, which is a wonderful pianist and accordionist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who I collaborate the symphony later with Vitor Gonçalves and a bass player, Eduardo Bello. So Mark Momas contacted him about teaching a Brazilian class, and Vitor suggested that I would teach together with him, Mark Momas and Marco Cello. So that's what brought you and I together.
Yeah, yeah, and I've
been doing this for 1 year and a half.
Wow.
Now, from the 19th to the 22nd of July, we're going to teach our second Brazilian music intensive course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I saw your name, I remembered immediately that you were the drummer on Points of View by Nando Loria.
Yeah, I did that record way back in 1994.
Yes, yes. And Lyle Mays was on that record too, right?
Yeah, Lyle Mays is there too.
Mm, yeah.
And so is Matt Garrison, Matthew Garrison.
Mm-hmm, yeah, right.
Jimmy Garrison playing bass on that.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful album.
Yeah, The Cry and the Smile, which you mentioned that you're doing a remake of, that's one of my favorite tunes off of that album.
Yes,
and
I'm playing drum set. There are 3 drummers on that CD. They are Ron Gold, a drummer that was living in Boston back then. He's from California. I had the pleasure to meet him while I was in California doing a tour with a pianist called Weber Iago, who is now called Jasnanda, I think. I met Ron Gold there, and then we quickly, introduced each other because of Nando now Claudia. The other drummer on the Point of View is Danny Gottlieb.
Yeah. Mm.
When I met a few times here in New York.
Yeah.
That's a good album called Points of View.
Yeah, and actually Nando Loria had been Pedro Aznar's replacement in the Pat Metheny group before they recorded Letter from Home. Nando had done a tour with the Pat Metheny group before the album.
Yeah.
And
know that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually.
Nando told me that he did a tour. back then.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And he was on the very last Pat Metheny Group tour in 2005, The Way Up. And, you know, it's a real shame that Lyle Mays has quit the music business. He did a Jazzy's podcast last summer, I believe, and he said that he's sort of stopped doing music and he's now a programmer. And that's a real big blow to the music world, because Lyle Mays is just one of my all-time favorite pianists and keyboardists. Yeah. And also, yeah, since we're talking about people who've played with Pat Metheny, what's been going on with Armando Marsal? Because he was on an album by Antonio Adolfo about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I believe, called Tamo, which I reviewed, and it's a terrific, terrific album. So what is Armando Marsal up to these days?
He's back living in Rio de Janeiro, and I understand that he's the percussion, he's been leading, how can I say in English, he's like the mestre of bateria of Portela, which is one of the traditional summer schools in Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
He's been leading that, directing the bateria, which is the percussion section of a summer school for a few years. Portela is very influential, you know,
mm-hmm.
together with Paulinho da Viola, so many people. Portela.
Wow.
And then he does record dates there as a percussionist. And, he also comes from a family of samba school masters, and I think his grandfather, Bidi Marçal, I think his father, they all related to samba schools.
Wow, well, yeah, right. I remember that, because when he joined the Metheny Group in 1987, he talked about how his grandfather was a percussionist, and he comes from a long lineage of percussion players, and he got the job with Pat by playing in a circle, and Pat heard all the different percussionists, and he liked Armando Marsal, and Marsal played and recorded with him for about 8 years. Oh, 10 years.
Yeah.
Almost.
I think, does he play that first circle of Pat Metheny?
No.
After that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Still Life Talking was the first record that he was on.
Right.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I got the chance to play with him back in Brazil.
Wow.
When I was part of, for a little while, I was one of integrants of the a band led by Ricky Pantoja. So I played drums and Marsal was the percussion.
Mm.
We got along really well musically, and we had fun and we became friends. And
wow.
It's always a pleasure every time we run into each other.
Mm, yeah, he's such a terrific percussionist. And I guess the thing that I like about percussionists is that all the colors that they can contribute to a musical situation, and really Brazilian percussion is like in the fabric of so much of jazz music and music in general. And of course, another terrific percussionist that I think most people know from like Michael Jackson records and pop records, Paulinho da Costa.
Paulinho da Costa, very influential too. He's been in the West Coast for years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the other thing that, you know, we are blessed from being Brazilian, because Brazil is such a rich music culture, you know.
Yeah.
It's a huge country, maybe as big as the U.S. And but there's music everywhere. There's a specific music that would feature in each instrument, you know, either you play cavaquinho, which is the Brazilian ukulele that's very used for samba, you know, rootsy samba, and choro, accordion in the northeast of Brazil, so it's very important. The flutes, you know, in Brazil, we have this particular flute called pífano that's used in the north. East. So, and triangle, you know, percussion, you know. So it's like almost infinite possibilities of what you can do with percussion, you know.
Yeah.
Bumba, alfaia that's used in maracatu. In samba, you have pandeiro, you have heco heco, you have epiki. You know, and for singing as well, you know, and for every instrument, you know, Brazilian, you can find a voice in Brazilian music, you know. Guitar, you know, since Laurindo de Almeida, that, you know, lives in the U.S., you know, it's amazing, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's Toninho Horta. There's Ricardo Severa. There's all these incredible guitar players from Brazil.
No, Hector Villa-Lobos, he wrote like 12 or more etudes for guitar, you know. They are very famous there. Those etudes is part of the classical material, you know, worldwide universities, you know. You know, it's part of the acoustic guitar, classical guitar. Everybody has to know some of Villa-Lobos' pieces. And so the guitar is very important to Brazil, the acoustic guitar, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Charlie Bird, of course, brought people's awareness of the acoustic guitar and Brazilian music very much.
His record, Jazz Samba, was the first record of Bossa Nova in the U.S.
In
1962, with collaboration with Stan Getz.
Yeah.
Charlie Bird, yeah.
Yeah, I have an excellent... I think I have one Charlie Bird record, but it's a thing that he did at the Concord Jazz Festival back in, I think, 1995. And it's got Ken Plaplowski on clarinet and some other guys, and it's a really terrific...
My neighbor.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's great. So
I think he lives like one block.
Wow. So before we wrap this up...
Charlie Bird, too. I got to meet Charlie Bird, too.
Amazing, man. Before we wrap this up, because we could go on forever. We could talk for hours here. Where could people find you on the internet?
Where people find me on the internet?
Yeah, like the website where they can purchase your music or find videos.
I have my website, which is Vanderlei at VanderleiPereira.com. Video, I think I have a couple of things on YouTube. You know, my computer skill is a little bit limited, you know. And I haven't been able to put all the stuff that I have stored in my apartment yet. Maybe one day I'm gonna come to that.
Okay.
And I'm also about to release the first CD of Blindfold Test, and then I guess that's gonna be the propelling force to get me become more visible on the internet.
Sure.
Yeah, or maybe I have to find, you know, I have to hire somebody to do that for me. Otherwise, it's gonna take so long. I'm very slow learner. When it comes to, you know, digital world.
Once again, my sincere thanks to Vanderlei Pereira for taking his time for this interview. And you can catch that intensive at the New York Jazz Workshop, that Brazilian music intensive, July 19th to the 22nd, with Vitor Gonzalez and Vanderlei Pereira. Once again, the New York Jazz Workshop podcast is just part of what the New York Jazz Workshop does to increase the scope of jazz education in the greater New York area. If you want to learn more about Brazilian music and its rich history, you can take courses with a world-class faculty including Vanderlei Pereira and Vitor Gonzalez. For the New York Jazz Workshop podcast, I'm your host, CJ Shern. Peace, love, groove, and keep swinging, everybody.